This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
We are so back. We are always so back on 5-on-3. Welcome in to another episode of 5-on-3. In the words of James Burley, WFUV's best, if only, hockey podcast, I am Jack Warner. I am joined by Lydia Perner and Alex Diaz. We got an absolutely loaded crew for a loaded show because there's a lot going on in the tri-state area right now, all things hockey. But we also do kind of have a special guest that wasn't originally on the guest list, but I was able to kind of, you know, coerce him into talking some Devils. I think, in, you know, for him, he's probably not the happiest to talk about the Devils right now, but we'll get to that later. We do have James Burley joining us from behind the glass on a producer mic today, so that is very exciting. But before we get into those things, I want to prioritize my day one hosts right here before we throw it over to James. Lydia, Alex, how are we?
I'm doing really good today. You know, I was taking the train back from Massachusetts this morning, had a lot of free time, and I learned something really cool. So I'm going to ask you guys a quick trivia question. How many chicken tenders do you think it would take to fill an NHL rink?
Wow. So are we talking like the space of the ice?
Yes, the ice surface. And James, you can answer this as well.
Oh my God.
Isn't this a crazy good question?
Yeah, I'm going to go 38,000.
What do you think?
I'm gonna go like 50,000. I think this makes me a little hungry. I didn't have lunch, but this is a perfect question to start the day off.
Jimbo, you got anything?
I'm doing some math back here. Hold on. So they're saying the average size of like a McChicken McNugget is 3.75 inches squared.
Right, but these are tenders though.
These are tenders. Okay, yes. Hold on. Come back to me.
Oh my goodness. I mean, we'll come back to you. We're waiting on the answer, though, dude. You gotta throw something out there.
Well, they're saying a chicken tender is like 5 inches long, so that's gonna be like a square. It's like 6.25 square. And a hockey rink's 200 feet, so you do that in inches. It's like, oh man, you got 200 times 12. Come back to me. I don't have an answer.
All right, Lydia, what is it?
It's 407,918 chicken tenders.
Close. We were
so I had 410,000. My math rounded out. So I think I forgot some like significant digits or something. But
sources, just trust me, bro.
Sources, calc. It's short for calculator, by the way.
Well, that's a hell of a way to start off the show. I mean, I can't believe how far off we were. That was like I really thought I was I thought I was almost being like overzealous throwing 38,000 out there.
Yeah, I thought mine was
gonna be too crazy. Well, it might be hard to try to top that. But Alex, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's my first time on here, so I couldn't have asked for a better day to come and talk.
Is it debut?
Yeah, it is.
I'm such a jerk for not asking.
No, you're
Well, happy debut to you. That's awesome.
Thank you. I'm super excited to be here, and starting by talking about chicken tenders, I wouldn't have had it any other way.
Also behind the boards, we have Max Spitza. Max, if you want to hop on the mic real quick with James, I just want to throw you under the bus. Not throw you under the bus, but again, so you told me before that you have a Lafreniere jersey on the way in the mail. You said you got a blue one because the white one you spill too much to wear confidently, which I do respect that move a lot. But you are from Arizona. Would it be safe? I've been saying this more as a joke, but would it be safe to say or accurate to say that you are a Rangers fan who was formerly a homeless Coyotes fan?
It was unsafe to say I am. I mean, I'm a baseball player at birth, so. And I'm in Arizona. Hockey wasn't really a thing until a year before I came to Fordham, came to the East Coast. So before I was just, I liked seeing guys hit other guys as hard as they possibly could on skates. But a good friend of mine is a diehard Rangers fan, so I've become a diehard Rangers fan with him.
We're getting everybody involved. We're getting everybody involved behind the mics. But enough introduction. Let's get into everything around the tri-state, and we were going to start with the Islanders, and we will get to the Islanders, but that was abruptly halted once the opportunity presented itself that James Burley would be available at our disposal to talk about the New Jersey Devils, which I'm sure there have been times where he'd be more excited to talk about the New Jersey Devils than right now. And the crazy thing is, they don't even have the ugliest record you've ever seen. 5-3-1 to start the season through their first 9 games. But I think Morale is a little low after the absolute curb stomping that we witnessed in the Prudential Center a few nights ago when the Tampa Bay Lightning came to town and you saw a Brandon Hagel hat trick. You saw Jake Allen letting goals by that didn't even look like he tried to save. 8-5 was the final. That's the thing that's crazy. The Devils managed to score 5 goals and still it be one of their worst losses of the season. But, James, I want to toss it over to you because, again, we're only 9 games into the season. I know down the stretch every game matters and points matter and all this, but 9 games into the season under a new head coach, are you hanging your head as low as some others are after this game against Tampa the other night?
Not as low, perhaps, but I think there's. It's also worth mentioning from that game, they were within 2 goals for most of it.
Yeah,
and only at the end did it really get away from them. So I don't want to. Look too closely at how Jake Allen performed against the Lightning. A puck careened off the boards, and he wasn't there for it. He was behind the net waiting for it.
Yep.
He didn't do a great job, but he also pitched a shutout against Utah week prior, and that was a Utah team that was coming in hot. So I don't want to. Look at the goaltending for this and say that that was a problem. The blue line has been an issue. We knew it was going to be coming into the year. They beefed up quite a bit, and the top pairing is the one that's being victimized the most. Brendan Dillon and Dougie Hamilton, I don't think that they can stick with that pairing. I think Sheldon Keefe's got to break that up. They both had the worst game score after that Lightning game. Just to peel it back a little bit in a broader issue, just look at the first 9 games. Yeah, it's just nine games into the season, but we're the only team that's played 9 games. We had the benefit of starting the season in Prague. Some people say that that's, a travel issue, whatever it is. We got to play back-to-back games against the Sabres. Come on, that's free 4 points to start the year. And that's exactly what it was. The 5 teams the Devils have beaten have all been beatable teams. They beat Washington. They beat the Sabres twice. They beat Utah. But the teams that they have lost to, the Lightning, the Panthers, these are teams that they're going to be playing in the playoffs, and they haven't shown to this point that they are, amongst the elites of the Eastern Conference, which is a bit worrying. It's early, yes. It's a bit worrying, though, to me, because on paper, this Devils team should be right up there with just about every other team in the NHL this year. The good news is Markstrom was not the goalie at fault for a lot of those, so we can still hang our heads high. We got a real goaltender now.
He's looked great.
And he has looked really good, to your point, Jack. So I'm not hammering the panic button. I do think that there are some things to look at in Sheldon Keefe's way and say, hey, I'd like this to start going a little differently, but we're not even 10 games in here. Seamus Casey being sent down is an interesting one, but with Luke Hughes and Brett Pesce on the horizon, it makes sense. So I hope those two guys provide a little bit more stability back there.
I mean, I kind of had those points written down about also, I am a Rangers fan, so everything I say about the Devils needs to be taken lightly because I'm not very nice to them, but it's been an all right start. The thing about, they've yet to beat a playoff contender, losing to the Maple Leafs 4-2, losing to Carolina 4-2, and then whatever happened in that Lightning game the other night where there was no defense in that, I mean, Jake Allen gave up a goal that we saw Keandre Miller score against Utah, that unlucky bounce off the stanchion. The ref was kind of in the way. I'm not really too worried about that because he actually has been pretty good so far for the Devils. And obviously having him back up Markstrom, that's huge. But the thing with the Devils last year that, James, I think you started to talk about is the blue line was an issue. But again, you have Hughes and Pesce coming back tonight. You have a guy like Brendan Dillon. But there's just no pressure on the teams that they're playing against, on their blue liners. Victor Hedman was able to walk in and shoot whenever he wanted. Hagel had that one from the point last night. I know he's a forward, but there's just been no pressure from the Devils. They're not playing a 200-foot game. And yes, they are one of the best offensive teams in the league, and that's why they were able to put up 5 goals. But I do think it's alarming that they're not buying into Keefe's clog the neutral zone system yet, and they're not really pressing defensively at all.
Yeah, I think their first 2 games in Prague, they were very, they attacked a lot when they were on defense, and it was entertaining to watch, and they played well. And then they sort of came back to the States, and it's kind of not been that. Like, I feel like they've lacked aggression. They kind of haven't been playing these games as if they need to be playing all 60 minutes. It's kind of just been, go out there, skate hard for a few seconds, and then come off and see who can do something else. I think it's been interesting to see the fan reactions because, yeah, they've won 5 games. Like, if you're going to sit down and say they've played 9 games and they've won 5 of them, it should be good, but this Devils team seems to be reminiscent already of the team from last year that kind of got themselves down early and then tried to come back but just never could, like, get over that hump or never could play as well as they could to win those games.
And the thing that stands out to me the most with this early in the season, you already starting to see some issues on the blue line for the Devils, is last year, and I'm not a Devils fan myself, but I'm trying to almost put myself in the shoes of a Devils fan, that if I look back to last season, one of the things I think was crazy was how bad the blue line problem was for them last year. But the first, like, I think the thing that we talked about the most and broke down the most was the goalie situation and not the blue line situation, because they were shuffling through goalies, and it felt like every, you know, all throughout the season, you could, I think they played at least four or five different goalies in a game, not in one game, but started four or five different goalies throughout the course of the season in a regular season game. And some of that had to do with, you know, general performance issues. Some of it had to do with health issues. Like, there was all sorts of different things. But it almost felt like the goaltender situation, the blue line situation got talked about, but the goaltender situation almost got kind of scapegoated, where that was, like, the bigger focus. And that was more of the talking point that we got to, was, like, you've never seen the same two, you know, you've never seen the same goalie play two games for the Devils in a row. And I think this early in the season, you're already starting to see some faulty blue line play again from Dougie Hamilton on that top pairing, who you're blessed to get back at the beginning of the season. His absence was definitely felt last year. And I do agree with James that I think that pair is probably going to get split up. But the thing that just concerns me again is it felt like last year, and I just keep referring to last year, that I think part of the reason the goaltender play was so bad and was such a cesspool was because of how bad the blue line play was. So I really am hoping that this isn't an issue that starts to snowball for the Devils, where you're seeing Markstrom play so well to open the season. And you know that Jake Allen has the potential to play well and is a good goalie. Obviously didn't have the greatest night of his life the other night, but to be fair, is a good goaltender. You just really hope this isn't something that snowballs them into having that chicken with a head cut off goalie experience like they did last year.
Well, I think there's a really good point in there about lack of attention to what the blue line was last year for the Devils. The defense was awful. I think those who were close to the team talked about it, but in a general sense, it was masked more clearly by how bad the goaltending was. And now where this year it's not so much of an excuse, I think I can't see who said what, because I can't really see through the glass, but I think it was Lydia who pointed out that in their own zone, it's not just the defensemen who are making errors. I think I have not been as frustrated watching the Devils this year and the three home games that I have now seen them this year at just being inept at getting the puck out of their own zone. I think the fourth line especially has been incredibly victimized in terms of just absorbing pressure from the offense, and teams that have good players punish them. That's why they're getting away with beating some of these weaker teams, because they have the ability to absorb, block another shot, whereas a good team, a team that has a Victor Hedman on the blue line, can walk in and just score. The Utah Hockey Club, for as good as they were at the start of the season when they came to New Jersey, were on the backs of a whole road trip to New York, and they looked tired. They looked fatigued in that game. So while I give Jake Allen credit for pitching a shutout in that one and the Devils doing well to win 3-0, let's not peel away the context here. Things were being pretty friendly to them. So I don't think they've answered the bell in terms of dealing with adversity well. I do think some of that has to come from some of the star players. I think Jack Hughes has been pretty quiet to this point in terms of goal production. He got on the score sheet yesterday, which is good, right? That's what you want from him. But has he been the guy that you think is going to be a 125-point player?
No.
Haven't seen that yet from him. Dougie Hamilton, I think he started the season defensively better than I would have expected. Position-wise, he gets caught out a lot, but he's blocking shots, getting involved in ways that he hadn't been in previous seasons. So I was really excited to see that. But he has also now taken a bit of a slow ride to get some points on the board, and he's a guy who was at 70-plus points just two seasons ago. So I agree, and I think it was Alex, congrats on the debut, by the way, who mentioned that this team feels more like the 2023 3-24 Devils than the 2022-23 Devils, despite having those guys healthy again. For me, it's not been the newest additions to this team that are causing the problems. Paul Cotter has been phenomenal. Stefan Nason has been fantastic. Markstrom has been great. But it's been some of the holdovers who have been a little bit more disappointing. Jack Hughes is a superstar, but he's kind of playing like second fiddle to Jesper Bratt and Nico Hischier right now. Those guys need to be on the same page together for this team to be successful. And that's not to mention Andre Palat, who they cannot figure out a place for. He only made the fourth line worse. And that's a line that had Nathan Bastian on it, who I love, but is just not a great NHL-level hockey player. They put him back on the second line with Jack Hughes and Jesper Bratt because, you know, they have similar profiles, but they just can't figure out a place for this guy, and they got to pay him $6 million over the course of the next 3 years for a $30 million contract as a whole. I know this has now gone from me being a bit positive to being super negative, but I think some of what you guys said opened my eyes to the real reality of this team, and there's something has to change in terms of the product on the ice. This was a team that even last year was quite good, at least the league average at 5-on-5, and now that's not what they are, and the special teams aren't clicking really either. So they do score in bunches sometimes, which is fun and exciting. But, yeah, they got to play better 200-foot hockey if they want to be at the top of the Metropolitan Division like they expect to be.
Now, James, one more thing, and then I'll let you on your merry way. I appreciate all the time that you're giving us. WFUV's very own New Jersey Devils beat reporter, along with Tucker Austin. 9 games into the season, I know I said in the beginning of the show that it's a small sample size. But so maybe this is a contradictory statement because maybe it's too early to even – tell with 9 games if you can even answer this question yet, but what have you made in general in a few words of Sheldon Keefe so far?
I think Sheldon Keefe is the right man for this job. I think his system, which I believe Lydia briefly mentioned, to really make teams' lives difficult in the neutral zone, and that should absolutely be the way the Devils play. They've got so much speed on this roster, both on the front end and the back end. Top line, bottom line. These are younger players for the most part that have speed and skill. You should want to make things difficult for other teams against you in the neutral zone. That has really caused the Devils to play more physical in a lot of games. Throughout the first 6-7 games, I clocked this on my Devils podcast, shameless plug, Puck on the Parkway. You can listen to that anywhere you get your podcast. We talked about how the Devils are averaging more than 5 more hits a game this season than last season. And that was very apparent. In the last few games, it hasn't been so apparent. But that's also something that has been a detriment to the Devils game. When they try to pay attention to physicality more, they kind of get beaten in their own game. I think if you recall, I know some of the Rangers fans in the room won't want me to bring this up, but the first 2 games of the first round of the playoffs in 2023, the Devils tried to out-physical the Rangers, and they got bullied and lost very badly, very embarrassingly. Only when they tried to play their own game back in MSG did they even up that series and then eventually go on to win it. Sorry for bringing that up to everybody. But this is kind of what we've seen now under Sheldon Keefe. The Devils trying to play a little bit more like a brutal old-school hockey team and just getting beaten at doing that. I think once they get back to skating, stretching the ice, long passes out of their own zone early and quick instead of just absorbing pressure and trying to dig out the corners, you got to do that. There's an element to that. That's why they brought in Brendan Dillon. That's why they brought in Stefan Nason. That's why they brought in Paul Cotter. That's why they brought in Curtis Lazar midway through the 2023 season. But you can't abandon your roots. You can't abandon what makes you a good hockey team. And in a sense, they've done that. I don't blame that on Sheldon Keefe, though. I blame that on the growing pains that this is going to take. Once they figure that out, I don't know when that's going to be. Hopefully it's sooner rather than later, because this team is too good to be meddling in the middle of the Eastern Conference. They're just too darn good for that. So I hope it's sooner rather than later. But I think Sheldon Keefe is doing the right things. I think he's addressing the right issues. It's just a matter of time of when they can put it together. Having Brett Pesce back there, more so than even Luke Hughes, is going to be massive, massive for this team.
James Burley, I love you.
I love you too, Jack Warner. Thank you so much for letting me hop on. And congrats to Alex on making your debut. And Lydia, this is the first time we've gotten to share the airwaves together. It's been very exciting. I hope the Rangers lose every game they have for the remainder of the season.
Well, you did hire Sheldon Keefe, so you'll be a first-round exit for as long as his tenure goes.
Oh, boy.
That's the Toronto thing. Come on. What are we doing?
I'll give you that. He'll leave that in Toronto.
All right, thanks, Lydia.
I had to say it.
Oh, boy. James, thank you as always. Really appreciate it. And we'll let you get back to whatever your Thursday had in store. But I do just want to, for a few more minutes, just keep the topic on Sheldon Keefe, because I think it's an interesting conversation. You know, he is at times has been one of the more, I guess you could say, polarizing coaches in the NHL. And one of the things is, you know, with any fan base, you obviously want to see immediate success. Fan bases are never going to be patient. And I know that some fan bases get a little more hate than other ones. Like, I know New York teams obviously, like, are known for having loud, raucous, you know, demanding fan bases, right? But in reality, there's no real such thing as a patient fan base. Like, yes, there are teams that are in rebuilds and all that kind of stuff, and like, you understand where the season is, but there's really no team or fan base that's going to be content with a rocky start. And I think one of the things you've seen so far is Keefe, you know, he's inheriting this team and it's not the cleanest start that you've ever seen so far. But the factors that I don't think that are being looked at very much are a few things. One, we do have to understand that Sheldon Keefe, for better or for worse, is he's a stubborn coach.
Yes.
He calls things how he sees it. And you know, we know he's not a fan of losing. Like, you can even tell from his post games. Even I know you joked about the post game exits, but I mean postseason exits, excuse me. You joked about those, but like, even in those postseason exits, you could tell just by how snippy he would be in post game sometimes and how direct he would be with reporters. Like, this is a guy that is a competitor and doesn't like losing. I think another thing to understand is he hasn't inherited the fully healthy New Jersey Devils yet. He's getting Luke Hughes and Brett Pesce back very soon, which is obviously going to beef up that, you know, blue line presence. And on top of that, a lot of beefing up being done in the offseason. I don't think this is the same. This is not even close to the exact same team that he coached against last year that he's coaching this year. On top of that, it's a brand new coach. His system has to be learned. You were talking about how he has a very distinct system, and a lot of that has to do with like neutral zone dominance and you know, really making the opposition's life as hard as possible. So I think when you consider all of those moving pieces at one time that I just mentioned, all that word salad, I'm not going to say that he has this grace period where the Devils are allowed to play crappy defense and lose games. But what I will say is that, like, I agree with James in the sense that, like, is it appropriate to have some dissatisfaction with how some of these early losses have done and how they performed in those? Yes. Would it be a panic button situation right now? Absolutely not.
I think you kind of mentioned it with the New York market, but Toronto is probably in hockey the most brutal market.
Oh, without a doubt.
With reporting and stuff. So I think that's part of the reason why Keefe has the reputation he has. He was a pretty good coach for the Leafs. You can't deny the success he had. Obviously, he wasn't over. Well, he was actually able to get past the first round in 2022? They beat the Lightning.
Yeah.
But yeah, he wasn't able to get them to where Toronto should have went.
And he also, like, on several occasions, I think it was multiple different seasons, had the highest scoring team in hockey under his tenure.
I think the Devils' roster construction is very similar to that of Toronto, to the point where they're very front-loaded with forwards and maybe. I'm not going to say it. They are a much better blue line than Toronto.
Oh,
Toronto
without a doubt.
Has had defensive issues for years, mm-hmm. and doesn't look like they're going to solve that anytime soon. So the Devils, with that beefed up blue line, Keefe should be able to get his system going, and they should be able to figure out on the defensive side. I think a few weeks ago I was talking to Tucker, and he said the timeline should be probably end of October to really see if the Devils can figure out this new system, and if not, that's when you start to hit the panic button. But even, I don't know, going into November when they start to play some higher competition, yeah, that's really the benchmark for me, because, again, it is going to take time, and they were the benefactor of playing the Sabres twice in the first two games of the season.
Yeah, for sure. I think in the past, even Keefe's Maple Leaf teams, they've always started slow, and, like, no matter where they wound up, they've started slow, but I think for the fans especially, I think they've begun to treat it as like there's no excuses left. They went out, they fixed the goaltending. The defense was supposed to get fixed. Last year, the Devils were seen as like a soft team. Bringing in Keefe was supposed to change that. And when you bring a guy like that in, it takes the players buying into it for this team to be as successful as they can be. And I think once this team buys into it, I think Nico Hischier's bought into it already. Once he brings this team with him and buys into it completely, this Devils team shouldn't look anything like this, like, at the end of the month.
No, that's a great point I didn't even really think of, is, like, there have been multiple occasions under his time in Toronto where, like, the team, they weren't hot starts, and then the run for the playoffs was really exciting, where it's like a here comes Toronto type situation, kind of like what the Red Wings wanted to be last year, but obviously couldn't, you know, pull it all together in stride. But speaking of the Detroit Red Wings, to wrap up this Devils segment, they do play the Detroit Red Wings in Detroit tonight at the Little Caesars Arena, 7 p.m. puck drop. Should be a good game, and especially as the topic that we're addressing of the blue line, considering Detroit, even though having a 3-3 record, have shown no shortage of offensive prowess and being able to score. So it actually should be a good test for them tonight on the road, to play against a very high shot volume Detroit Red Wings team, and really, you know, test that blue line, see if they can get back in the win column after a rough showing against the Tampa Bay Lightning earlier this week. Now we are going to head over to Long Island and talk about the New York Islanders, who honestly, you know, it felt like our talk about the Devils was pretty gloomy. I feel like the talk about the Islanders is going to be more gloomy, and I hate to have a gloomy show, but
the only
winning team in New York right now is the New York Rangers. So I mean, we'll get to that one later, but New York Islanders with a lethargic start to the season, 2-2-2 in their first six games, and matters were not made any better the other night when they drop the game against the Red Wings, actually, at UBS Arena, 1-0. Now, 1-0 may just be like, oh, that's, you know, that's a hard fought game, it's back and forth, you know, maybe just a real goaltender battle, and no. The Islanders only gave up 10 shots to the Detroit Red Wings and lost 1-0. And on top of that, got off 30 of their own and did not score. Now, granted, I will say I was watching that game off and on. A lot of those shots were, like, deep, like, from the point, like, just flinging the puck in, trying to find something. But, my God, this team does not look too good to open things up, Lydia.
To my content. I'm pretty happy that the Islanders haven't been good.
Love how unbiased this podcast is.
But, great. The story of the Islanders in the past few seasons has been their inconsistent play, their inability to close games, and they can't go on stretches of just playing good hockey. Last season, we saw a period towards the end of the year where they made that great run and made the playoffs, but yeah, again, like, the Islanders just have not been consistent with their play. I really thought the hiring of Patrick Roy was going to solve that issue, but it's starting to seem like within the locker room, they just got to figure out a way to string wins together, shifts together, and just find a way to put a product on the ice that fans will want to show up for. Because I will say, the attendance versus Detroit was the lowest in UBS history. And
that was really bad.
That's alarming for the third game of the season. Mm-hmm. And I get it. Yankees are on, and maybe people don't want to go to UBS for a game, whatever.
And they might also still be in their Mets elimination depression.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
A lot of Mets fans on Long Island.
But there's no excuse for 12,000 people to show up to the game.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, this is their third game being shut out this year. Last year, it took them until, I think, January 15th to be shut out for the third time. So the fact that they're not producing as well as they should right now, it's kind of crazy to think about. In almost every game they've been in, they've been able to outshoot the other team. It's just the fact that none of their shots seem to be falling, which, I don't know, falling's not the right word, but
well, yeah, they're not. Yeah, I guess, yeah. They're not quality chances.
Yeah, sorry, I've been talking about the WNBA too much.
All good.
But I think it's been super interesting to watch this team. It's a little sad that they're not playing as well as they probably could be, but this... But I think their special teams unit, their first power play unit, has been better. And their game recently, they were moving the puck around better. They had good chances, but obviously none of them went in. But their other power play unit is just struggling in that. Once they figure out how to play hockey together almost, this team will be able to win games. And it probably sounds stupid to say figure out how to play hockey together, but right now it doesn't feel like a team. It kind of just feels like a bunch of people on skates with hockey sticks. Like,
yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I do like that you bring up that first power play unit, because I do think that is one of the only high points that we've seen so far, that Lee, Horvat, Pajot, and I think it's Dobson and Palmieri. It's a perfect mixture of speed but also experience. I like it. I know they've already converted a couple times this season already, so obviously that's one of the I guess you could say higher points so far, but again, the record doesn't really reflect a overwhelming success. Not to mention, again, I don't think their blue line problem is as big as the Devils blue line issues were, but again, I also don't think their blue line has looked very good either. Noah Dobson has had a slow, sluggish start to the year, a lot of foolish giveaways, not really taking care of the puck. The only person who's really impressed me so far from any of their blue line pairings is Alexander Romanov, and you know, he's always really impressed me. I think he's always been a very consistent contributor for them. So that's obviously things going on in general with the Islanders, just the general state of things. But I want to talk about some big news, and it's not pretty. It's not happy. Like, again, we're not really having a very upbeat Islander segment, but it was just announced that you basically have no reason to wear your Anthony Duclair jersey to UBS Arena for the next 4 to 6 weeks because you will not be seeing him play. It was just announced this week from Lou Lamoriello that Anthony Duclair will be out for 4 to 6 weeks with a lower body injury. I still can't stand when they do that. Tell us what he hurt, please. I hate when hockey does that. It's a gripe I have with the sport, but that's neither here nor there. Anthony Duclair, on Saturday, their victory against the Montreal Canadiens, they won 4-3, but he injures himself driving the Montreal net. It didn't look like there was a whole lot of contact, but still, he goes down to the ground in a heap of pain and has to be helped off the ice. And he only really had, in that game, he really hadn't done a ton. He had 15 minutes of ice time because, again, he's one of those workhorse guys that you can really leave out there to do something. He's one of the most well-conditioned, fastest players in the NHL, but didn't really have a whole lot going on in that game, one shot on goal. But the bigger story, obviously, is this lower body injury that apparently will not keep him out long-term, will keep him out long-term, but isn't going to keep him out for the season, luckily. But, Alex, I'm going to pass it over to you. I mean, I just feel like it's such a blow with all of the excitement that surrounded picking him up and how good that Islanders' first line looked, especially in the beginning of this season and all throughout the preseason. I remember that was the one thing that people talked about with the Rangers matchups in the preseason was how disgusting that first line looked for the Islanders, how much speed Anthony Duclair added to that first line. I just wanted to get your thoughts on just what a blow this is.
Yeah, I think it definitely hurts them, but at the same point, having him hasn't necessarily helped them. Like, because obviously they haven't played that well to start this season. Having him hasn't been, it helped them, but it hasn't been that thing that's pushed them over the edge like you would have thought it probably would have been. I think now that he is injured, I think you might have players step up who haven't been stepping up just because they need to, like they need to get by these next 4 to 6 weeks. It's tough for Islanders fans. It's not going to make them want to come go to UBS any more than they did. But it'll be interesting to see where this Islanders team can kind of pull players from and try to fill in those shoes.
Yeah, I also think I think the biggest thing with this Duclair injury, what it has shown is the Islanders have no depth. They have no depth in their system. So what Patrick Roy is now doing is he's moving Simon Holmstrom up to that top line. And yeah, Jack, back to your point, that was a line that I was putting up there with some of the best in the NHL. I didn't think Anthony Duclair was going to be able to bring the next level out of Bo Horvat and Matt Barzal, but what they did in the preseason, and again, I think it's just growing pains with lack of production early on in the season, but that was still a line to me that on paper I think you could put up there with some of the top lines in the NHL. And now that Holmstrom, who Islander fans are almost calling Josh Bailey 2.0 in the sense he hasn't really earned being on that top line. He's not the greatest player. Mm-hmm. He's young. In his career, he has 21 goals, 15 assists in 131 games. Not terrible, but he honestly looked pretty good on that third line with Anders Lee and Jean-Gabriel Pageau. So I don't think I love breaking up that line, but who else can you put up there? You can't put Oliver Wahlstrom on the first line. He's a fourth line guy at best. You can't really
who's getting played on the third line right now. Yeah. Like he's kind of a question mark anyway, but he's a more bottom tier line kind of guy. Yeah, you're not going to put him on the first line. No.
Roy's whole point, I forget how to say his
Wah.
Name. Wah.
Wah.
Wah. Patrick Wah. Wah. Yes. Thank you. His whole point was that he wants someone with speed to play with those two guys. And Holmstrom, yeah, he's a speedy player. I do think he's really good on the defensive side more than he is offensively. So I'm not sure this is going to really do anything for the Islanders. Again, you can't touch that second line. That second line has been a bright spot with Siplikov and Nelson.
Yes.
And Palmieri, you can't touch that line. So I think the Islanders' lack of depth is alarming. We'll see. They recalled, I think, Liam Foudy.
Mm-hmm.
But you got guys like William Dufour, Matt Maggio playing for Bridgeport. Maybe they'll get a chance. Those are two young guys I'm pretty high on for Islanders fans. But, yeah, we'll see what happens.
And Holmstrom on the first line, again, I think them making that decision tells me that the main thing they were looking for was who can replace Duclair's speed. Not necessarily, I don't think that was a skill pull. I think that was a speed pull.
Exactly.
Someone who can keep up with Horvat and Barzal. Because I think if they were going from the skill aspect of things, I don't know if that's the option that they would have went with. The one thing that I will be curious to see is, like, again, it always feels like there's injuries on the top line for the Islanders. Like, especially even Matt Barzal, who you 2 years ago you lost for like half the season because of injuries, but Horvat, who you know has had a couple, who's gotten banged up. Luckily, nothing serious, but has gotten banged up a couple times. It feels like they are always trying to fill some sort of vacancy on that first line, which has to be so frustrating if you're an Islanders fan. And the one thing that I'm curious to see is if you continue to not really see Holmstrom live up to what you need from a first line left winger, do you cycle Anders Lee back up there? I know he's on the older side and doesn't score a whole lot, but they've cycled him up there before when they've had to fill in some holes. And again, he's a veteran, he's an experienced guy. Do you throw Casey Zizekas up there? Like, you have options at left wing. None of them are really as young as Holmstrom is, and none of them are really going to be probably as fast as Holmstrom is. But if he can't get the job done, which again, I think he has the potential to be an effective placeholder while Duclair is injured, I'm just curious to see what they would do next, because again, they've been here before and had to sort of just cycle guys through that first, you know, spots on the first line. And some nights, some stretches of the season, it worked okay for them, but then there were some nights where it was, good God, can they please find some medicine to get this guy okay again? We need our normal first line back.
Well, Lane Lambert, before he was fired last season, tried that out quite a bit.
Right,
and
right.
Like you said, it worked some nights. A lot of nights it didn't work. So that was tried twice last season, none of which stuck. So, and I don't hate them moving Lee up there, but again, I think the main thing they're trying to fill is the speed to keep up with those two.
Right.
So you're not going to see a guy like Anders Lee get moved up there. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how long that lasts and what the production is.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see for sure. The Islanders, just, they can't have nice things. Like, gosh, I feel like that's always how it's been. It's been like that for a while. But the Islanders do need to figure it out, and hopefully they figure it out soon. They have players who should be capable of doing it. It's whether or not they will be able to.
Now, the New York Islanders, tough back-to-back games coming up. But I think it's what's needed. I think they need a kick in the pants after a 2-2-2 start. Like, I think the best thing you can do is get a big win over a competitive opponent. But tomorrow they play. They got a nice little back-to-back setup. This is going to be an exhausting couple days. They have the New Jersey Devils in Jersey tomorrow night at 7 p.m., followed by a Saturday night home ice matchup against the Florida Panthers. So you're going to get to see what we talked about, whether or not it comes to fruition, whether or not it works. You're going to see Holmstrom get some more opportunities on that top line as the left winger. You're going to get to see some more opportunities for those blue line pairs to, you know, make more of a presence and have to really hold the line against some high shot volume teams, especially the Florida Panthers, who are really just a, like I said, a shot by volume, just pepper and pucks type team. But New York Islanders 2-2-2. A lot of season left, obviously, but a very underwhelming start to the season. Especially, I think the expectations coming in with Waugh finally getting his first full season and getting to actually have, like, you know, be the coach from a season opener to the end of a season. Definitely not an exciting start to the year. But finally, we're going to have a talk that's positive about Max Spitz's favorite hockey team, the New York Rangers, who, by all accounts, are absolutely on fire. 5-0-1 to begin the season. They have yet to drop a game in regulation. There is a chance for them to do it tonight because the Florida Panthers are a very good team, but I still like the Rangers going into this one. Florida off to a rockier start than they're used to with a 4-3-1 record. But the Rangers, for the first time, and you got to understand, this is a Original Six franchise. This team has been playing hockey for over 100 years. For the first time in franchise history, has begun the season with a six-game point streak, which I think is really cool when you see history made, especially with franchises, like I said, as old as the Rangers. I know, Lydia, you said you had another little tidbit of information you walked in and told me right away.
They're the first NHL team in history to win their first four road games of the season by at least three goals.
Wow.
So they're getting, not only are they're winning in commanding manners. They're getting shots on goal, they're getting goals, and they're playing really well at 5-on-5, which is not something us Rangers fans are used to.
It's not something that they did really last season. Again, it was one of those. It was a weird sort of conundrum of having one of the most kind of mid to remarkably average 5-on-5 presences in the NHL, but having a nearly unstoppable power play that scored a lot and at its worst was also sometimes getting a lot of shoot the puck chance, but for the most part carried them a lot. Not to mention they did get a lot of one line team allegations last season, which at times I think was very true. And at times I think might've been a little bit of an exaggeration, but the big thing I do want to talk about, yes, is how strong they've been on 5-on-5, but more so than anything, it feels like you're finally seeing teams not have to focus on guarding one line. It feels like you're not just defending one line against the Rangers anymore. You're now seeing bottom six production. Philip Hedel has looked phenomenal.
Unreal.
He's looked fantastic. Kaapo Kakko had a three-point night the other night against Montreal. The fourth line chipping in has been, I think, a really nice surprise as well. I know that's something that you can't really be expecting on a game-to-game basis, but if you can start stealing games because your fourth line is stepping in and making a difference and making their presence known, I think that's absolutely enormous.
I think it would also be a disservice to the Rangers if I didn't mention that Will Cooley is a point-per-game player, one goal, five assists, and leads the team in plus-minus at a plus-9. I know some people say plus-minus is a useless stat, but when it's helpful to showing off Will the Thrill and
spreading
the agenda.
When it can push your narrative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's leading the team at plus-9, and you started to get into it. The Rangers are, in my opinion, becoming not a three-line team, a four-line team.
Yeah.
I hate calling them the second line, that Panarin, Trocheck, and Lafreniere. Like, that's our first line.
It's their first line.
But watching Riley Smith was a guy that I was an advocate for the Rangers to go after at last year's deadlines. I remember when we made the trade for Chad Ruedel, I just saw the Penguins icon come up on my Rangers app, and I was like, oh my gosh, we just got Riley Smith. No, we got Chad Ruedel.
No, you got Chad Ruedel.
I think he has been the best Rangers player on that line with Mika and Kreider, who the Rangers have showed they're not splitting those two up, since Pavel Buchnevich. I think he's better than Frank Vetrano, and granted, it is a small sample size, but that line got off to a slightly slow start. The past two games, they've been really good. Riley Smith got on the board against the Canadiens, where he pickpocketed Lane Hudson and was able to get in on that breakaway. That's the missing piece of that line, and obviously, Mika getting a 5-on-5 goal is huge. He doesn't do that very often. He scores a lot of goals, but not 5-on-5. So having that line get going, to me, is the most important thing for the Rangers, but then complemented by a third line that leads the NHL in expected goals per 60, which is just incredible. The importance of getting Philip Hedel back has just made the Rangers that much more deeper, and I didn't think Hedel would have that impact because it was such a gruesome road to recovery, and not necessarily injury, but head injuries are a scary thing, but they've been an incredible line. And then the fourth line, who I think we're running it back again tonight, who we ran against Montreal. That's a fourth line that I think Peter Laviolette will use in all situations.
Edstrom and Carrick and Brodzinski.
That's my favorite fourth line
combo. It's fantastic. I love it.
They got on the board in Montreal.
Edstrom scored, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brodzinski actually.
I think both of them did, though. I thought Edstrom got a goal.
Edstrom beat out the icing to then tap it to Brodzinski when the whole arena thought it was an icing.
Yeah.
And then Brodzinski had that open net. But he might have scored.
No, I don't think he did.
I don't remember. He hit the post, I think, at the very end of the game.
That might have been it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think especially the line that I've been really interested in would be like the third line with Coyle, Kittle, and Cabo Kako, because I think they put them together at the start of training camp and they wanted to let them grow together. And I think that's exactly what they've been doing. The Rangers have scored, I believe, 7 goals right now with them on the ice together. And knock on wood, they have not been scored on 5-on-5, which is super interesting to watch with this line, because last year the third line didn't feel like it was a line that you wanted to run out there every game, and especially in a like close game. Obviously, the Rangers haven't played a super tight game yet, but it will be interesting to see if this line can stay together and really be like a threat to other teams as the season goes on. And I think this Rangers team right now isn't really one that anyone wants to play. I think this is a tough team to have to start a season against, especially this team has come together and they've been playing together, and that's been super important for them. They played together at the end of last season too, but it hasn't been the same as it has been this year.
And the third line was actually the next thing I did want to talk about, because to me, it just feels so perfectly balanced. And the reason I say that is because I really think all three forwards on this line provide, they bring something different to the table that I think makes just such a well-rounded, hard-to-beat line. I think with Hedl, you get that scoring ability and that finesse, that quickness, that ability to you know, create chances and score, and that's like your raw, like your offensive guy to me of those three guys. Kaapo Kakko is a little bit in the middle there, where like, yes, he has the ability to score. He's not really a high scorer. He's actually probably the unluckiest hockey player I've ever seen in my life. 100%. The amount of just missed goals he has during games is truly astonishing. But Kaapo Kakko being one of the most, in my opinion, one of the most underrated defensive forwards they had last season too, and this season, where you really have somebody who's a little bit on the smaller side but is quick and shifty and really does play a phenomenal like two-way game. If he could score a little more, I think obviously it would be, he'd be a little more useful. But I think you get the offensive expertise from Hedl, you get the defensive prowess from Kakko, and I think Cooley is kind of your guy in the middle who can do a little bit of both, but honestly is the physical presence of that line, is a guy who will drop the gloves with somebody, will lay hits, be physical, do that kind of thing. He can be a punk. Will Cooley is one of those guys that really can, for as likable as he is for some people, he's also probably the biggest punk in the world to play against to other people. So I really do love this line and really hope that they continue to play the way that they're playing, because this could really be like, if this team makes a long, long run, like that line could be like an unsung hero, because like we mentioned in the beginning of the segment, this used to be looked at as a one-line team, and now what you're seeing is four different lines that are starting to, you know, create in different ways and start to have to draw attention from defenders in different ways, where it's not just anymore that you just have to be awake when Panarin, Troch, and Lafreniere are on the ice. It's now everybody chipping in.
Even on the defensive end, too, like the pairings have been great in the sense that Fox and Miller just got put together this season. Looks like that's staying, right?
Yep.
Schneider and Trouba, that was the pair that I was worried about.
Yep.
Trouba's been great.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not $8 million great, but he's been great. He had the two block shots that led to the first goal in the Montreal game. He hasn't made too many noisy mistakes. Obviously, whenever he makes a mistake, Rangers fans talk about it. But the reality is, Fox makes those same exact mistakes and nobody talks about it. I think he's been solid. And obviously, the argument between Jones, Mancini, and Lindgren coming back, that's one that I have my opinions on, and I think everyone has different opinions on. But Laviolette is going to – it's a good thing. He's going to have some tough decisions to make with the defensive
board. That's a good place to be in.
Exactly. I mean, I, in my opinion, you can't move Mancini right now. He's playing –
He's playing way too well to move him around or do anything too, like, insane.
On the offensive and defensive end.
The one thing I do want to talk about really quickly, it's not that we're going to have, like, deep, thoughtful discussion about it. I just want to say – what a hit Trouba laid the other night.
Trouba train.
Did you guys see that hit?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So there were some mixed responses to it, because Trouba having a track record of being a very physical player and sometimes letting his elbows fly a little bit. That's, I'm just putting it in a polite way. He really, like, there were some people saying, yo, he led with the shoulder, he led with the elbow. Like, you heard a couple different things. I think he fell victim to a guy ducking at the last second. Like, you watch the playback, like, that is a clean hit that the unfortunate recipient of the hit. Yep, and Max is playing it right behind the ice. Yeah, he loves it. Max Spitza is loving this Jacob Trouba aggression. But honestly, I look at it as, since it's a clean hit and he's not suspended, I look at it as a good thing. I look at it as a good thing because one of the things that I think was the most, I can't speak for Jacob Trouba, I can't walk a mile in his shoes, but I have to imagine if he saw the online discourse about him after the playoffs last year, all of the mean things that people were saying probably would have brushed right off. I think that the thing that would have hurt him the most if I was him would be hearing the people that are saying that he was giving up on the team and that like he just sold in the playoffs, because obviously there's that highlight of him back to the boards where I forget who it is on Florida drives the net and scores. Like, that was the highlight that kind of went around, and I think people called his effort into question. And as a captain and as a competitive hockey player, like, I think that probably really would bother him. So I think being able to lay a big hit like that and then, you know, answer the bell for it, have to go fight for it, even though it was a clean hit, on top of, like you mentioned, how he's playing objectively well, I low-key see that moment as possibly being kind of a good, like, nudge in the right direction, energy-wise, vibes-wise, momentum-wise.
I mean, I'm always frustrated when players have to answer for a clean hit, especially Trouba.
Yeah, yeah.
The Montreal did get the instigating penalties. So we did end up going on the power play there.
Yeah.
And they got the extra, I think it was like the 10-minute misconduct.
I agree with you. I understand why they threw down with him on this fight. Like, I think that hit happened way too fast to know that it was a clean hit.
Well, there was an interview with Pat Maroon. I think it was actually Lazarus.
It was awesome. I loved it.
He said, like, Maroon was just like, you can't tell. You don't see it sometimes. It when it's happening in real time, it always looks dirty, and then obviously when you slow it down you can see it's a clean hit. So I do get why I forget who went after Jacob Trouba. Was it Pete? No, I can't remember.
I forget
it
who
was
went
Mike, maybe Mike Matheson. I can't
in my I forget
but yeah, I get it. It was an incredible hit. It was actually one of Trouba's cleaner hits for sure. The elbow was down, he led with the shoulder, and yeah, the guy, I don't remember who it was on the Canadiens, he just ducked at the wrong time.
Yeah, I think Trouba's at his best when he's hitting people. Like, honestly, this was definitely a clean hit, but I think anytime Trouba hits somebody, somebody's going to question whether it was clean or not, just 100%. Because of, like, the nature surrounding him. Same thing. It's almost like every time Rempy's near someone, somebody assumes it's a penalty just because, like, or somebody assumes he's going to fight someone.
It usually is with Rempy, though.
But sometimes everybody just assumes he's going to fight with somebody just because he's on the ice. Like, it almost feels like with Trouba, if he hits somebody, somebody somewhere is going to say, oh, that wasn't a clean hit. I think a little bit of the controversy probably stemmed from the circumstances because that game wasn't close.
Yeah.
But I think also in hockey, you don't just stop playing. Like,
right.
And I think Trouba plays like that, and every time he hits somebody, it's because he's going for the puck or because something, he's playing the game how he plays the game.
Well, the Rangers are on fire. They are 5-0-1 through their first six games of the season. But tonight, they got a real test. It's the Florida Panthers at Madison Square Garden. I will actually be there providing coverage for WFUV Sports. Lydia Perner will be there as an obnoxious hockey fan. And Alex, will you be there in any regard? I'm just going to toss it over.
I'm going to be at softball practice.
All right, all good. You play for the softball team?
Club softball.
Okay, I play for the club baseball team. Wow. Fantastic, very nice. All right, I didn't even know that. But anyway, Spitz, you can send us out. Thank you very much for working things behind the board today. A fantastic episode of 5-on-3. I'm always happy to be here, hosting. So much going on in the tri-state, in the world of hockey. Devils, okay. Islanders, nah. And Rangers, whoo, on fire. But for Lydia Perner and Alex Diaz, I'm Jack Warner, signing off yet another episode of 5-on-3. Tune in with us next week when we break down a whole new week of stories on the ice. Thank you for tuning in.